top of the morning to you, my listeners. 'Tis another exciting episode of Fire and Water Presents. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and if you cannot tell by the silly accent, we are celebrating Easter early on the Fire and Water Network, which is to say it's St. Patrick's Day and... oh, for the love of God, how did my grandparents talk like that? Hi, everybody. Welcome to the special St. Patrick's Day episode of Fire and Water Presents. I'm going to put all my cards on the table and confess that unlike the first episode of this podcast, which took forever to organize, this episode came together in just the last 12 hours. Last December, my wife and I traveled to Dublin, Ireland for a little holiday vacation, and naturally, I made time to go to 3 different comic book stores while I was there. On my last day, I picked up a copy of Green Lantern Mosaic, issue 1. I've read it before, but I wanted to buy another comic on my last day in Dublin, and it was only $1 or 3,000 euro. I don't know, I was bad at the conversion. Angie took care of that stuff. Anyway, a Green Lantern comic that I bought in Ireland. It was the perfect subject for a St. Patrick's Day podcast. Except for one nagging little detail. The comic was written by Gerard Jones, and a few days after I got home from Ireland, Jones was arrested for something pretty reprehensible that makes me disinclined to read any of his work in the near future. And then I just forgot to plan anything else for St. Paddy's Day, but luckily, the Fire and Water Network is an amazing group of people who apparently don't have anything else to do on a Thursday night, because I came up with the idea of having everybody submit their favorite green superhero. If you haven't noticed yet, whenever I'm desperate or behind schedule, I crowdsource my podcasts. So far, it's worked out really, really well. So, yeah, that's what this episode is going to be. Members of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, plus one guest, sharing a beloved superhero whose signature color is green for St. Patrick's Day. And we will begin with Rob Kelly, host of the Film and Water podcast, the Treasury Cast, Pod Dylan, and more.
For this Day of the Green celebration, there are so many great green-centric characters to talk about in comics. There's Green Lantern, Green Arrow, the Green Flame, Green Goblin, the Green Team, of course. But the one that's really on my mind for this celebration is, of course, the most famous, probably, green superhero of all time, the Hulk. The Hulk is one of those characters that I think, kind of like when Shag says people have a Batman phase, I think every kid goes through a Hulk phase, because the Hulk, probably out of all the Marvel characters, is the most childlike. He's misunderstood, he's persecuted, he just kind of wants to be left alone, and you know, I think that appeals to every kid. You know, who doesn't feel like that at some point in their life? So the Hulk is a perfectly wonderful childlike character that I think everybody hooks into at some point. And I actually am a really big fan of the Hulk. I love the TV series, of course, and it's not something that's ever come up on any of our shows all that much, and maybe that's something we should do down the line. Because there was a lot of great Hulk storylines. The Hulk was one of those comics I always read as a kid, like right after Star Wars or The Avengers. It was usually an always purchase for me, even though I have a whole lot of money to spend, despite the rumors. The Hulk was always a really cool comic, and I always liked a lot of there's a lot of great storylines, a lot of great artists have contributed to the Hulk over the years. But I'm going to limit this down to just one specific Hulk image, and that image is the cover to the Rampaging Hulk number 5, which was the black and white magazine that they gave to the Hulk that ran from 77 through around 79 or 80. Of course, it was sort of part of the way to cash in on the popularity of the TV show. The cover to this issue, which was cover dated October 1977, is by Jim Starlin. And the title of the story is Lo, the Submariner Strikes. And on the cover is a regal shot of the Submariner with his trident standing there with the water crashing. And right behind him is a large close-up of the Hulk, emerald green. It is, to my mind, the most frightening image of the Hulk ever conceived. The way Starlin drew it / painted it, the Hulk looks as monstrous and as scary and as angry and as non-heroic as I think I've ever seen him. And this comic, like I said, was cover dated October 1977. It was on sale in July and August. And for those of you that are listening to the show a long time, you know that if it was on sale in August, that means this was a beloved mountain comic, which means it was on sale when I was on vacation with my family up in the Poconos. And I remember the newsstand that had this issue. And I remember seeing this cover, and it frightened. And, you know, I wasn't really used to the Hulk looking that scary. The Hulk was a member of the Avengers. The Hulk was a member of the Defenders. The Hulk was a cartoon star. He was a hero. But on this cover, he looks like a monster. I mean, even Starlin even painted his teeth as slightly pointed. So he even has kind of like the his teeth look like something you'd see out of Jaws. It's just really terrifying. And I remember looking at the cover, being afraid of it, putting it back, picking it back up again, putting it down again. I just couldn't decide whether I wanted to get it or not. Because in 1977, I would have been 6 years old. So I was still pretty much a wee kid. And I think I kind of remember, like, I don't know if I was able to, like, handle this. This is too scary. But ultimately, I did buy it. I think maybe partly the fact that the magazine was, like, 75 cents, which was obviously a lot more than typical comics at the time, maybe had a little something to do with it. I do remember being really trepidatious about the purchase. But I bought it, and I loved it. It's a great magazine. It's basically one giant slugfest between Submariner and Hulk. It's one of the great battles. It's just so much fun. It's done in black and white, which gives it gave the whole thing kind of, like, earthier quality. The whole magazine is a great package, and I still have that copy. It's one of my most beloved, cherished items. But man, that cover, I will never, ever get over that cover. And you can go see it, go Google it. You can just go to Rampaging Hulk 5. You'll find it anywhere. It is probably the number one image I think of when I think of the Hulk. And I'm looking at it now as I'm recording this, and it still kind of scares me a little. That green is just really, really scary. So yeah, the Rampaging Hulk, man, can't beat it. So that's my celebration for this Day of the Green, talking about The Incredible Hulk.
Next is Bass, co-host of First Strike, the Invasion podcast, and one of the hosts of the Lonely Hearts Romance Comics podcast.
As we're getting closer to St. Paddy's Day, I can only think of one superhero that really embodies green, and that's the Martian Manhunter. I just love John Jones, the Manhunter from Mars. I love him because of his powers. I mean, he has this incredible range of powers. He has superhuman strength, a speed, a durability, endurance, of course. You know, the classic superhero stuff. But also he has, he can fly on his own, which is great, without any flight rings or, you know, gadgets or stuff like that. And he can become intangible. He can phase through things. I mean, we've seen this in the cartoons from, the Justice League Unlimited and Justice League cartoons. We saw this often. But also we see it in the comic books. He can shapeshift. Maybe you don't know this, but the form he uses or the form he has as a superhero is not his true form. So that's a little bit of a mystery. What is exactly his true form? I love it because he tries to look like a human but keeps the green skin. So I just love that. And also he has telepathy. He's like this, he's basically the walkie-talkie system or the communication system for the Justice League. I mean, they can all talk telepathically through Martian Manhunter, and that's a great thing. He has also different powers, like he has Martian vision, you know, and it's like laser beams coming from his eyes and kind of like Superman, but it's Martian. I don't know what's the difference. I don't know if it's a concussive blast or it's a heat vision, or I really don't know what it's Martian vision. It's a Martian laser thing. And I mean, he can also read minds and control people, but he doesn't do that very often. I've never really seen it that much being done because he's a nice guy. I mean, he's the last of his kind, the last green Martian, better known as, you know, these philosophers and these scholars. And, you know, they were driven by peace and driven to better their world. And, you know, they unfortunately failed. And Martian Manhunter was the only one left of his kind. Well, almost. Well, is he? Oh, yeah. Miss Martian, she's a white Martian. Spoiler alert, Miss Martian's a white Martian. But still, this guy has incredible power, an incredible power level also. But what I really like about him is that his weakness is so stupid. I mean, this great superhero has this stupid weakness. And it's something they did a lot in the old days, like in the golden years, where, you know, Alan Scott Green Lantern had this incredible power with this power ring. But, you know, he was vulnerable to wood, you know. And Green Lantern back in the day had this this weakness to, and this is stupid also, to the color yellow. And they actually use that to create, you know, the yellow lanterns and the, everything surrounding the color yellow, you know, as a weakness to the Green Lanterns. And you know, these power, these great superheroes had incredible powers, but their weaknesses were so stupid, you know, because, and I kind of like that, because with an incredible or an incredibly powerful superhero, you kind of need something to balance it out. And a stupid weakness would be great just to balance out, you know, these hotheads who has all this power. And, you know, Martian Manhunter, if he ever got to, you know, the point where he was like being obnoxious and saying, oh, well, I'm super powerful. You know what? You light a couple of candles, that brings him down a notch, you know. So, but that's not the only reason why I like Martian Manhunter. I really like Martian Manhunter because his alter ego, his human alter ego, John Jones, he's a cop. He's a detective. And he, you know, he solves murders and stuff like that. You know, he's this smart detective who could probably work with Batman, you know, on cases. He's that smart. You know, he's one of those guys. But what I really like is because he's this kind of old-timey detective, you can bring Martian Manhunter into a film noir type comic book, and he would fit right in there. Or since he's a Martian, you can bring him into you could write him into an incredible sci-fi, retro sci-fi type space odyssey, and that too would work. So, you know, he's so versatile for doing everything. I mean, he's smart, he's a philosopher, he's a scholar, but he can also throw down, you know, he can shapeshift, become this kind of a fighting monster and, you know, go toe-to-toe with, or hand-to-hand with anybody, really. And on the other side, story-wise, he can fit into a superhero, you know, very dark film noir type thing. You know, he could hang with Batman, you know, in the darkness, but he could also be very bright and nice and light and be inside, you know, in a Superman story, and he'd fit perfectly. So when I think of Green, I don't just think about St. Paddy's Day. I think about Martian Manhunter.
Next up, Chris Franklin, host of the Supermates podcast and co-host of Batman Nightcast and the Power Records podcast.
Green characters. How about the Riddler? So what is it about the Riddler that I like? Well, I think, honestly, it's got to be the 60s TV show. It's got to be Frank Gorshin, because I can't honestly think of... I mean, I like it when the Riddler shows up, but I can't honestly think of a comic story that's jumping at me and says, oh, now that's a great Riddler story. I mean, there's some good Riddler comic stories, but it all comes back to Frank Gorshin. I mean, if he hadn't played the Riddler, I don't think I'd be talking about the Riddler right now. And if I was, you wouldn't know who I was talking about. So it all comes back to the Riddler. And Frank Gorshin, of course, he had the tights on that the Riddler had in his two prior appearances in the comics, in the Golden Age and then the one in the Silver Age before the TV show came on. But he rocked the green, actual green suit with the vest and the bowler hat. And that's just a sharp look, you know, so he, you know, pulled it off. Plus, me and Cindy met Frank Gorshin, and he was a really cool guy. And, you know, he was the most threatening villain on the 60s Batman TV series. You actually were afraid of what he was going to do. The dude was nuts. I mean, he made the Joker on that series scared. You know, the Joker was afraid of what the Riddler was going to do. So... it all comes back to Frank Gorshin. And, you know, I think, like I said, there's been some good comic stories. The animated series guys even admit they never quite got a handle on their version of the Riddler. They tried, and I like John Glover as the Riddler. I like his voice, and he's so smug, and, you know, he's smarter than everybody else, and I like that aspect of the character. But, yeah, it's just the Riddler's incredibly hard to write. I think comic writers have a hard time writing him, and that's one reason why he shows up a lot when there's a, you know, a Batman villain gang up, but individual Riddler stories aren't as plentiful as you would think, considering how much he's merchandised. You know, if you you've really got to put your noggin to the test to come up with a series of riddles that the reader will have a hard time figuring out, but also can figure out along with Batman. So it's just that he's a real challenging character. But everybody wants to tackle him because everybody liked the Frank Gorshin version of the Riddler. So he's one of my favorite green suited characters. And I've always had a fondness for him. So that's my green guy. That's my contribution for St. Patrick's Day. So happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. And, you know, wear green so you don't get pinched. See ya. Bye.
Next up, Zoom Yukinori, host of, I guess his show is To Be Determined.
Greetings, I am Zoom Yukinori, and I am delighted to take part in the Fire and Water Podcast Network's celebration of St. Patrick's Day by paying tribute to my favorite green character in comics. And it should come as little surprise to those who follow my antiques and misadventures on CBR's The Line It Is Drawn feature that I am a longtime fan of the DC Comics character Green Lantern. 43 years, to be exact. Now, my first encounter with Hal Jordan in a 1974 Justice League comic book that I held in my then 10-year-old hands is a story reserved for another podcast. But suffice to say, I found the idea of having a small object in one's right hand that enabled one to give form to one's imagination simply fascinating. What also fascinated me years later was what I believe to be the most brilliant media adaptation of the Green Lantern concept to date, and that's the wonderful yet no longer produced Green Lantern the Animated Series that aired on Cartoon Network from November of 2011 to March of 2013. Now, when I had first heard of the project, and this was months before the release of the live-action Green Lantern movie, I learned that the brilliant Bruce Timm was attached to the project, and I knew right then and there that the success of this series was sure to surpass that of the Green Lantern movie, the same way the Batman animated series surpassed the Tim Burton Batman films. And of course, to me, it did. In fact, I would say the animated series had far surpassed the visually striking yet otherwise lackluster live-action movie. And this was not only because of Bruce Timm, but the brilliance of his fellow showrunners Giancarlo Volpe and Jim Krieg, who, together with their cast and crew, crafted a series of 26 computer-generated episodes, featuring the cocksure hotshot Hal Jordan, the gruff stalwart soldier Kilowog, the dour Red Lantern Razor, and the aspiring AI robot Aya. Each episode delivered that intense sense of adventure, wonder, drama, humor, and emotion that the movie, for the most part, had unfortunately lacked. And it was all anchored by solid voice acting and characterization from the four lead actors, Josh Keaton as Hal, Kevin Michael Richardson as Kilowog, Jason Spezak as Razor, and Greg Delisle Griffin as Aya, as well as the several other brilliant co-stars. Plus the majestically heroic and sometimes eerily haunting music scores by Frederick Wideman, it was all just brilliant. Unfortunately, it was criminally short-lived. I, along with countless other self-proclaimed fanterns, as Giancarlo Volpe called us, had been disappointed when Warner Brothers Animation, DC Comics, and the Cartoon Network decided not to continue the series after 26 episodes. However, I and my children still have the equivalent of two original video animation series on Blu-ray that we continue to treasure. And again, as those who follow me on The Line It Is Drawn know, the show inspired much fan art on my part, the product of a pencil and a pen placed in my right hand that enabled me to form on paper and computer screens whatever Green Lantern concepts and scenarios thrived within my imagination. Thank you for listening. And my thanks to Ryan Daly for this opportunity. May you all have a fun and safe St. Patrick's Day celebration.
And now a special guest filling in for Siskoid, Nathaniel Wayne, host of 90s Comics Retrial and more.
Hello, Ryan and listeners. It's Nathaniel Wayne from the Council of Geeks, and more relevant to what I'm about to talk about, also the Punch Like a Girl podcast. So, when I think of green superheroes, there's plenty that leap to mind, and obviously there's plenty with green in the name. We've got Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Green Hornet. Even if we take it out of the name, Martian Manhunter, Hulk. We got villains, we got the Abomination, we got the Leader. Heck, a lot of stuff associated with the Hulk is green. You know what that includes? My favorite green superhero, She-Hulk. I love She-Hulk. I love her as a character. I love the things that they have been allowed and been able to do with her over the years. I think she is epically awesome. And of course, she started, you know, from a very not impressive place. She was created simply so that Marvel could be sure that they created a female version of the Hulk before a female version of the Hulk was created in the TV show. Because if it was created in the TV show, the, you know, the hit one from the 70s first, they wouldn't have the rights to it. So they had to rush and make it first. It's the same reason Spider-Woman got created. But they just started from that place, and she was just a female version of the Hulk. That was all she was. But you know what? They decided that wasn't enough. And they gave control of her over to creators to let them do some interesting stuff. Some really interesting stuff. She was Deadpool before Deadpool even existed. She was breaking the fourth wall left and right in the 80s. Get your hands on some sensational She-Hulk. Watch her have arguments with the writers and the editorial staff. And that was also the era during which she said a line that I will always associate with her in my life. I'm 6'6" and bright green. People are gonna stare at me no matter how I dress. I love She-Hulk. I love her sense of self. I love her pride in herself. I love that she is powerful, but she's also smart, which was really well exemplified during the single green female storyline, which focused on her as a lawyer, because yes, Jennifer Walters, her alter ego, is a practicing attorney. This storyline, oh, this is some of my favorite stuff Marvel ever did. So, she starts working for a law firm that specializes in superhero-related law. So, she's dealing with things like a guy gets superpowers, but he hates it, and he sues the people that caused, you know, the standard scientific catastrophe that caused him to have superpowers. So, she's having to argue in court that this guy being now super strong and virtually indestructible, having all these powers, is a bad thing. She's lawyered up on behalf of Spider-Man. And it also focused wonderfully on this interesting dynamic where she felt better as She-Hulk than as Jennifer Walters. She felt more sure of herself. She actually would get very antsy when she was in her quote-unquote normal-looking form. And how that spoke to a woman's sense of self-worth being tied to how she looked and people perceiving her as being attractive or something really grabbing attention, and how that tied into her sense of self-worth and her struggles with coming to better terms with all sides of herself. This was all great stuff. She was fun. She was funny. She's empowering. She can beat the crap out of a big chunk of the MCU. Look damn good doing it. Whether she is rocking a suit in purple, whether she's part of the Fantastic Four with her own Fantastic Four suit, whether she is in a business suit in the courtroom, She-Hulk is awesome. And I love her. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And now the one you've really been waiting for, the irredeemable Shag, host of Justice League International Bwahaha podcast, co-host of Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe, Aquaman and Firestorm, the Fire and Water podcast, and more.
Top of the morning to you, laddies. This is the irredeemable Shag calling to wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day. I hope you're having a great time, and I hope you are polishing your shillelagh as often as possible. I know that I am. I am currently on vacation. I'm actually at the beach. Ryan was kind enough to call me, but he is apparently too scared to actually be on the call. He's on mute. So everyone just waved Ryan the Skeeve daily as he sits here and watches us like a creeper. So I guess the topic at hand here is our favorite green superheroes, right? And it's St. Patrick's Day. So I am sitting here just, in theme. I am drinking a traditional St. Patrick's Day beverage. It is a lovely shade of green. It is a Diet Mountain Dew. So there we go, folks. Here's a toast to you. And when I went through the different characters I could have covered, here's some of the ones I almost covered. The Green Cigarette from Animal Man by Peter Milligan. the human stick of broccoli from the Eddie Murphy movie Daddy Daycare. And by the way, Ryan, you need to see that movie before the baby's born. Trust me, you will live in terror about what's to come. I thought about doing Shamrock from Marvel's Contest of the Champions, and then I remembered nobody cares about Shamrock, so forget that. I thought about doing Marina from my beloved Alpha Flight because they're just so awesome. I came very close to covering Kyle Rayner, who's my absolute favorite Green Lantern. And, you know, if you're thinking green is St. Patrick's Day, he really is kind of an obvious one. So I ultimately went a different direction. But one more I was considering was also Mera, who is, of course, Aquaman's, you know, girlfriend, wife, partner, whatever you want to consider her in different various continuities. She's also wears a green costume. So that was a great thought. However, at the last moment, my Canadian bacon spirit animal, Siskoid, of Siskoid's blog of geekery and a number of shows on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, he came to me and said, Shag, no, your favorite character is not any of those. Your favorite green character is Ambush Bug. And I said, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right, Siskoid. So thank you for that, Siskoid. If you're not familiar with Ambush Bug, it is, you know, Erwin Schwab. He is this fantastic character. He started off as an antagonist for Superman, and he had a suit that was made of this technology which allowed him to teleport and do some different things. And he was basically an irritant to Superman. It was kind of a pet project of Keith Giffen in Action Comics. And so he kind of took on a life of his own. I think Keith Giffen was in love with the character, so he made sure to bring him back in some DC Comics Presents. He appeared in several of those until ultimately somehow Keith Giffen hornswoggled DC into letting him publish a miniseries. And there was a 4-issue miniseries. They introduced his sidekick, Cheeks the Toy Wonder, which was literally just a toy he found and sewed a superhero costume for it as a doll. And he called him Cheeks the Toy Wonder. It didn't talk. It didn't do anything. It just ran around, sort of like the Tick's block of wood before the Tick. Then following up on that was Son of Ambush Bug. And the reason why I want to bring that up is because that's where I discovered Ambush Bug. I was, probably 14 years old, which is, by the way, the perfect time to read Ambush Bug. You know, Ambush Bug is written for probably, you know, adult comic book readers, but to really, in order to appreciate it, you need to be 14 years old. Anyway, so I got the Son of Ambush Bug miniseries. I found that at the local convenience store where I started collecting comics, and it hit every right note for me, because one of the neat things about Ambush Bug is he would break the fourth wall. He would actually look at the camera and talk to the people reading the comics. He knew he was in a comic book, and yet he still existed in the DC Universe. It was kind of like Deadpool before there was a Deadpool, or maybe Deadpool without guns is a way to look at it, and without all the dick jokes. So he was very funny, very sarcastic. Everything went wrong for him. Nothing went right. His sidekick was a joke. He was poor. He didn't have any money. There was a character called the DC Continuity Cop who was constantly trying to figure out ways to kick him out of DC Continuity. It was really funny. And even now, as I read the comic as an adult, I realize there's so many jokes I didn't get. And there's probably jokes I still don't get. And Ryan was kind enough to invite me on his Secret Origins podcast to cover the Ambush Bug issue of Secret Origins. And we had an absolute hoot. Now, I don't know that Ryan really took to the character as much as I did, but it was so much fun for me to revisit the character because it was a huge part of growing up. You know, okay, so I've read the whole Son of Ambush Bug miniseries, which I want to say is 6 issues, where he fought his arch nemesis, Argyle, which was his sock, who was bitter because he got separated in a dryer from his other pair. And so he fuses like a Doctor Doom mask on his face, and he has, you know, an alien armada, I want to say. And literally, a angry sock is Ambush Bug's main nemesis, which is just ludicrous. So I read that miniseries. I went back and got the first miniseries. Then there was a series of specials, like the Ambush Bug Stocking Stuffer, the Ambush Bug Nothing Special, and things like that. And he would pop up quite a bit through the late 80s into the early 90s. But once Lobo really came on the scene, that's kind of where all Keith Giffen's time and energy went. So Ambush Bug kind of went by the wayside. He had a slight resurgence in the mid-80s. He joined the Doom Patrol for a while, and he had his own special, which was called Ambush Bug Year Zero or something like that. And it was really funny because what happened was it was supposed to be 6 issues, and they published 5 of them. And the 6th issue just kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. So what they ended up doing was after like a year, they just published issue 7 of a 6-issue miniseries. And the whole issue 7 was about what happened to the mysterious issue 6. And a bunch of other creators came in to contribute. And it was really quite a hoot. It was very funny, very tongue-in-cheek. And it just was in the spirit of the character. And again, a whole bunch of breaking the fourth wall. So I absolutely love Erwin Schwab. He makes my heart warm. He's a fun character. They even had a DC Mayfair Games role-playing module called Don't Ask, which was done in the theme of Ambush Bug. I mean, that's got to be hard, running a role-playing adventure in the theme of Ambush Bug, because it's so off the wall. But Mayfair made it work. And it's one of Siskoid's favorite modules, I know, one of his first ones. And we do plan to cover it someday on Hero Points, maybe in the 6th or 7th episode, which is in about 5 years. But anyway, in the meantime, folks, again, I wish you a very happy St. Patrick's Day. I hope it's a great time for you. Again, just be smart. Let's not have a repeat of last year, guys. No molesting of the leprechauns, please. Okay. And in the immortal words of Ambush Bug, pop.
And finally, there's me, the host of Batman Nightcast and some other crap. If you know me, you know how much I love Beast Boy. No, I really don't. I considered talking about one of the Green Lanterns. I considered talking about the Golden Age Sandman who wore a green suit beneath a purple cape. I considered talking about villains like Dr. Octopus or the Lizard, Ra's al Ghul, or Brainiac. But the guy who has been on my mind for a while now, you have heard me talk about him on Midnight, the podcasting hour, and I will do a lot more of that on future episodes, Swamp Thing. His first appearance in House of Secrets 92 is one of the best short stories ever told in the comic book medium. It's a moody, atmospheric tale with prose by Len Wein and art by Bernie Wrightson that plunges an adrenaline shot into the heart of the traditional gothic tale. And then, a year after that, they picked up those same ideas, reworked them a little bit with some mad science, and created one of the best origin stories ever told in Swamp Thing Issue 1. And for the next 9 issues, Wrightson and Wein did masterful work on that series, reimagining classic horror tropes with a monstrous protagonist who had the soul of a modern man. There has been so much incredible talent working on Swamp Thing over the years. Most people will think of Alan Moore's run first, and that is deservedly so. It's staggeringly beautiful storytelling. But even before Moore took over Saga of the Swamp Thing, when the series launched with Marty Pasco writing, there's amazing work on some of those oft-forgotten issues. Check them out. I feel very lucky that I got a black and white print of Swamp Thing by Bernie Wrightson at the 2016 Boston Comic Con. Lucky, I mentioned, because Wrightson's health has declined recently, and he most likely will not produce any new work. One of my fantasy projects at some point is to get the print copied first, because I don't want to damage the original, and then get the copy colored professionally, because Swamp Thing works so much better in colors, especially the color green. So, there it is. We celebrate St. Patrick's Day by wearing the color green. You know, okay, there was a time in high school when I didn't. I remember I wore like blue jeans and an orange flannel shirt on St. Patrick's Day, and someone asked why I wasn't wearing green, and I said, "My name is Ryan Patrick Daly. Do I really need to prove my Irish credentials anymore by wearing green?" But anyway, in the spirit of the tradition of wearing green for this day, I really hope you enjoyed this special holiday episode of Fire and Water Presents. Big thank you to all of the guys who participated in the show: Rob Kelly, Bass Levesque, Chris Franklin, Zoom Yukonori, Nathaniel Wein, and the Irredeemable Shag. If you enjoyed the show or episodes of FW Presents, please leave us an iTunes review and support us on social media by liking, favoriting, sharing, and retweeting. Who is your favorite green superhero or villain? Let us know. You can leave a comment on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, which is at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Talking numbers, and the princess will wake up from her slumber, and all the knights will step forth with their armbands, and every stranger you meet in the street will make demands. So believe no lie and try your eyes.
The skeeves?
I don't know. It just came. I don't know. It's just, that's what happens when I have to do shit off the cuff, man. I you know me. I write all this crap down nowadays. This is all off the top of my head. I can call you something else. I don't know.
Please, let's stay with the skeeve. I think.
Okay.